you guys didn't mention him yesterday. Yeah, he needs to come break that down.
Looking for a complete report from the Science Center at the September meeting on the growth rates of fish. And we actually set it on, we didn't say exactly what stocks we wanted. Jim hasn't been in touch with the Science Center yet, and they'll do the best they can, but it's, we can't order the Science Center to do anything. We can ask them. They'll do the best they can, and they'll come back with something for us. So just so people don't have expectations in advance, that he's going to confer with everybody else there and get it on the schedule, and it's just, so we know in September they'll do the best they can with what they have to work with. So, but it's on their radar screen. So, Phil, did you want
to? To that point, Frank, I would just hope that they, I mean, I talked to Jim a little bit about it, and I understand that. And I think yesterday I thought we had it as a request, but I would hope it would be as comprehensive as they could possibly get. Thank you.
I'm sure they'll do their best. Okay, we're going to move into Magnuson. You'll find it behind tab one. We're going to be working off of two documents. We have document number 7, which I think was handed out at the meeting today, yesterday. Okay, and document number one is the House bill. We held a committee meeting back on June 2nd. And it's a very small committee. And the audience, everything's there. I won't go into who was there and who wasn't. We focused mainly on the House bill. We're almost solely on the House bill. We've done the others in the past. I'm going to turn it over to Pat. Like I said, it was a very small meeting. I don't want to put my personal bias into this because between the chairman's meeting and that meeting and other things going on, I don't want to put mine in. So I'll let Pat run it, and I may jump in a few times. Also, Paul's going to want to speak. You want to go first, maybe? Okay, Paul will go first. He wants to do an update from the chairman's meeting on the position of the councils.
Paul? Just mention to the council that there were 5 issues that I recall that were that we discussed in great detail at the chairman's meeting. And right now, there's been a draft going around. Dan Furlong has summarized all our discussion because the meeting was in the mid. And we should have the final draft of our chairman's comments on Magnuson probably within we have a conference call June 27th. So sometime in July, we should have the final results. But this is what we discussed as the top priorities in the letter from the chairman. One, there was a consensus that Magnuson Act should be beefed up a little bit in sections that are duplicative of the NEPA process, and that the Magnuson Act should be exempt from NEPA. And all the executive directors strongly feel that way, and we're still going to go forward recommending that the Magnuson Act be exempt from NEPA requirements. The second thing that was of great concern to the councils was our interaction with marine sanctuaries. As you know, we've been interacting with the Stillwagon Bank Sanctuary. Luckily, we have commitment that they will not change their designation to regulate fishing, but can you imagine if they decided to do their own regulations to manage fishing on Stillwagon Bank? What a problem it would be for us. Now, that is probably complicated tenfold with the Pacific Council, who has a string of marine protected areas and marine sanctuaries from the south coast of California to the northern coast, and they have significant problems interacting with different management schemes with their sanctuary folks out on the west coast. Same with Alaska, same with Hawaii. So the council chairman wanted to add something in Magnuson that says Magnuson trumps or is the only act that can manage fisheries throughout the range in the EEZ. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion about that. So those two issues were the top, NEPA and Marine Sanctuary Act. The third thing we have discussion about was framework adjustments, and I sent Bill Hogarth our regulations for framework adjustments, where you get, you know, you have one meeting of the council, you give public notice, you hold some comment periods, then you have a final meeting, and then you go right to final rule. All the councils felt we needed some type of framework adjustment process that we could use the council system and avoid going to proposed rule, final rule, especially on specification packages. There was discussion that now Alaska, even on their specification practices, has been required to do an EIS. So, you know, we just wanted to nip this in the bud. Can you imagine doing a spec package for herring just after we did the amendment and have to do an EIS on it? So we talked about adding framework adjustment language to the Magnuson Act. So that might be key, a third thing for you to include. The fourth thing we discussed about and are going to comment on is the provision about paying SSC members, paying advisory panel members, actually a stipend, similar to a council stipend. And we said we agree with that, but it shouldn't be mandatory. We can just see that all of a sudden it becomes mandatory and there's no money associated with it. And we'd have fewer and fewer meetings or less and less staff. So the council's on the funding of SSCs and the funding of advisory panel members said that, make it the ability to pay, but make it the choice of the council whether or not they wish to provide a stipend or honorarium. And the last thing that was discussed in great detail were the LAPPs, the Limited Access Programs. All of the council chairs felt that the language in there is kind of too restrictive. They didn't want to have petitions. They felt that the council process itself was fine. They, you know, looked at New England with a 66% referendum and petitions and things like that. And generally, they feel that if the industry comes forward, if the council wants to do any type of limited access program or a dedicated access program, they should be able to do so without a lot of restrictions. So those were the issues. NEPA, Marine Sanctuaries Act, framework adjustments, payment of SSC and AP members, and LAPPs.
Well, there was one other issue that you raised, Paul, at the council chairs meeting that I think it would be helpful if the council pursued, and that was the issue of the observer coverage payment for the observer coverage. As I've said before, we're looking at administrative fixes that would allow us to continue to use the scallop set-aside program, but anything we could do would be purely temporary, and we need a long-term fix to that problem.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that that we add something about observer coverage. That right now, as you know, in scallops we used to use the research tax set aside, and now we can't. So we've got very low coverage in our scallop fishery. So if we can use the only council that can use some type of a set aside of TAC or a set aside of or funding by the industry is Alaska, because there's a specific language in the Act that allows them to tax the industry to pay for observers. So we talked about that at the chairs meeting, and I talked about the tax set-asides, and the Mid-Atlantic talked about that as well. So if we can talk about utilizing tax set-asides to fund observers, we may get better data to support our management.
Okay, we can take that up from there. Ready for Pat?
There's no light. I'm just going to go through the list here and maybe pause after each item so that if you want to comment, you can, unless you want me to run through the whole thing right off the bat.
John, did you have one at a time? Okay.
Oh, dear. Some of these, just to give you a heads up, some of them are editorial in nature. They're comments to perfect the language rather than major issues, and I'll highlight which ones those are and which are the major issues. On the first one, science-based improvements to management, by the way, this is the name of the section, not necessarily right, just to help you if you want to find it in the Act, and that's on document, not in the Act, in the bill, on is document one that we're referring to. In this case, the first comment refers to SSC's setting the tax and the council's being compelled to abide by whatever the SSC's recommendation is. Even though they call it a recommendation, the councils would have no flexibility to deviate from that recommendation. In this case, the committee prefers to have the language changed so that the SSC's recommendations can be considered, and that's what this paragraph is about. Next.
Well, hang on, Sally.
I guess I'm not sure exactly how to comment on this because there were several items that were related to the SSCs, and my inclination is just to wait until Pat's done going through all of those. But since we're going through one at a time, that's why I raised my hand. I don't see this as just a minor change. I see this as, and correct me if I'm wrong, from the committee, but as supporting the status quo and the way science is used or not used by this council from its SSC. At a meeting last year, I remember it was the last time the chair of the SSC attended a council meeting, and I remember looking at Patrick Sullivan, who's the chair, and thinking, that guy looks really familiar, but I'm not exactly sure who he is, which is not a good thing. And I don't think I was the only one who wasn't sure who he was. So anyway, that's a long way of me saying that I think that this is a bad idea. I think that we need to be considering ideas that are being put forward at the national level for improving science and management. We talk about that a lot here, and I'm going to bring that up with several different issues that were raised during this meeting as well. But this is just the first of several. Thank you.
Pat. Sally's correct. This is not one of the editorial comments. This was a major issue. It's also consistent with the council's last set of comments. What the language actually says is that the council cannot exceed the ABCs recommended by the S&S committee, and it's stated here twice, and these references in this paragraph refer to those two places. So you can then discuss. I just wanted to clarify what it said, if that helps.
Pat, can you just pull your bike a little closer?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it would be helpful if when we discuss these particular issues, we emphasize what has already been discussed by the council and support it. In other words, I don't want to become confused regarding an issue being brought up by the committee that we may have already dealt with at a previous meeting and recommendations have been made. In other words, we'll be revisiting these issues again, and that may not necessarily be productive.
Okay, that's a good point, because a lot of these, as Pat said, are reaffirming our positions that we took under the Senate bill. So, Pat, you'll be
yes.
able to do that as
yes.
you go through?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, let me go ahead. Sorry. Compensation for SSCs and, in this case, advisory panels. This comment is consistent with the council chair's position that stipends should be discretionary and not mandatory, so that councils that feel like they need to pay their SSCs because they have to travel long distances, those councils can go ahead and do that. If we choose not to, or budgetary constraints prevent us from paying, then we're not compelled to. So this next statement, I should have numbered them, sorry. This next statement is in keeping with what Paul reviewed for you, in keeping also with our previous position.
Comments? Sally?
I understand the point that Paul raised as far as the financial limitations. If there was a different reason that the committee made this recommendation, I'd be interested to hear it, because just in the summary, I read this to, I interpreted this to mean that we just don't value our SSDs. And, these people are coming on their own time. And if we want to incorporate more science into management, if we want to invest in the SSCs, then we need to pay these people to participate and to give their time. So that with the understanding that there are financial limitations. So I'd be curious if there was any, what kind of discussion there was on this issue, because I just see this as another way that the council is resisting incorporating better science into our management and policy decision making.
Part of it was that most people felt that a lot of your SSC members are already compensated for whether they're working for universities or for the states, and they're already being paid to be there by somebody. So that was part of the reason for the compensation. And the other part was the advisors was definitely a financial. It was looked at it. I don't know if we did a calculation for our council, but I think the Alaska said it was going to cost them probably $240,000 a year just to pay their advisors. So that was something they felt that, industry members would be there, or a lot of them are being paid. But the SSC, I'll let other members speak. I think Eric or John. Eric?
Well, I guess I would be wary of accepting the notion without some comment that because we want to maintain the status quo for what we felt were good reasons, that means we don't like our science. I don't think we're sending that signal. So the issue is part financial, and as you rightly point out, the more broadly you carry this beyond the SNS committee, it's really financial, because we have a number of advisory panels. The way the system is now, and I think the chairman agreed with this, doesn't seem to be preventing us from getting good science. So I don't think the issue of the financing of it should – I think we should be wary about portraying that as another way that we're trying to distance ourselves from our scientific advisors. I think that's unfortunate. Thank you.
Okay, Pat.
Almost along the same lines, not quite, but in the same section, the Pombo bill specifies that the SSCs shall meet in conjunction with the council meetings, and the committee felt like because of the where we have our meetings and how frequently or not frequently we have our meetings, logistically it would be difficult to get the SSCs to attend council meetings, and that the way our agendas are set just doesn't accommodate that kind of setup. So that was the comment, that we also thought that requiring SSCs to meet in conjunction with council meeting was not practical, and that it should be discretionary, although I have a question mark after that. I wasn't sure. We didn't exactly say that, but I think we weren't opposed to it.
The language in the bill does say to the extent practicable. So it is a requirement, but to the extent practicable. And I read this as an opportunity for the council to have more access to members of the SSC and vice versa. And I don't see how that can be a bad thing, especially with the additional phrase at the end there, to the extent practicable. Thank you.
The majority of the councils do meet with their SSCs, and during the discussion, what I learned was that what they value the most is that whenever there is, they don't meet in the same room. The SSC will be off doing some business in a different room. And whenever there's a question about science, the council's chairs that were there said, it's wonderful to have your SSC in the next room, and you give them some tasking that someone has questioned the science or said something, and then they deliberate and they come back with some advice. So they felt that was very beneficial to have your science arm right there with all the scientific responses.
And for a few years, I was a member of the NAPO Scientific Council. And the Scientific Council would meet just the week prior to the meeting of NAPO itself. And I had firsthand experience watching the interesting dynamics between the scientists and the managers as we move back and forth. Questions were asked, answers had to be provided. It was a real interesting situation to witness. I didn't think it worked very well, frankly, and I know that many of the scientists were very uncomfortable with that pressure that was brought to bear because answers were demanded immediately, and yet scientists oftentimes are not in a position to provide that kind of immediate advice without having first the need to reflect on data and, you know, to do some work behind the scenes. That takes time. Science is not magic. It requires thoughtful deliberation. So I can understand why some other councils have their SSCs, you know, working with them closely. And if it's working well, I'll be very surprised. And if the scientists feel really comfortable with it, I would again feel very surprised. Once again, relying on my own experience, watching the dynamics of it all. Of course, with NAPO, it was more dicey because we had individual nations, you know, competing for the prize, so to speak, with the scientists representing the different nations being perhaps influenced by the fact that their delegation wanted certain things to happen. I'm not saying that would happen with the SSC. Nevertheless, you know, all of those pressures are still similar sorts of pressures might still be there affecting the SSC as they have to quickly deliberate on science questions asked and then answers that have to be provided with very little reflection.
Thank you. Sort of a similar comment. And of course, Sally's comment somewhat mitigates my concern. To the extent practicable, essentially means you can do it if you want to. Nevertheless, when I think about this issue, I think about the North Pacific, which pretty much manages all their fisheries on hard quotas. They meet four times a year. They bring their scientists in from long distances, and they give advice on those types of things. And it's fairly, I won't say it's cut and dried, but it's laid out in a way that you can get the advice, you can have the interaction, you're done with the meeting, and you go away for 3 months, and 3 months later you deal with an entirely different set of species. Think about our agendas. Just this meeting, but any one of them, really. We have a diversity of things that we bring before ourselves, and often they aren't amenable. They don't need an interaction with scientific advisors. So then I try and put myself in the role of an SNS committee. If we were to say five times a year, come and sit in another room for 3 days at the hope that we'll come in and ask you a question that might take you a half an hour or an hour to answer, and the rest of the time bring your laptops because you'll have to be doing something else. I just don't think that's, in some respect, I think that's more insulting of the demands on their time to make that a requirement. So I think it should be discretionary. I think if we find the time in the future where we think it would be beneficial to have simultaneous meetings or have them present, we'd have to set that up in advance given their busy schedules. But I would be very leery about leaning towards requiring them to do that because I think it would be very inefficient on their time, and that would be viewed as almost peremptory on our part, that if you want to be on our committee, you have to be here for 3 days every 3 or 4 months, and we may never ask you a question. So, thank you.
Okay. I think it's John, but you're behind Vito, so. Okay.
John Williamson for the Ocean Conservancy. I just wanted to remind people that the impetus for this recommendation overall, that these three items that you're discussing is about, which is how the SSCs interact with the Fishery Management Council process, flowed from the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy's recommendations that there is a need to more crisply separate conservation decisions from allocation decisions. And that's what I think that this move in the bill is attempting to do. So the question I'm hearing you discuss specifically is how this council uses its SSC, which is very different from how other councils use their SSCs. And that might be what you really wanted to pull out recommendations to the House. Your first recommendation here is not, it's not clear to me in reading it whether the issue is how you use your SSC or whether you're suggesting that the science that you want to be able to reserve the right to consider what is the best available science for setting TACs. I mean, the wording of your comments seem to suggest that there is some fudge room between National Standard 1 and National Standard 8, and that you want to be able to maintain that ability to set higher TACs than might be the best available science recommendation. I don't think that's your intent, but that's what these comments seem to imply. And the second thing is, as far as SSC member compensation, as far as I can understand about how the academic world works, at least, the people who are participating on your SSC are having to take time away from their paying jobs. So they may get paid as part of their professional careers, but their career descriptions may not include service on this council's SSC. And if that service is time demanding, then that can be a hardship for people for you to get the very best people to serve on your SSC. So my suggestion is that the compensation issue is probably very important. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Dave?
Just a question here, kind of more a point of order. Are we going to vote on these as individual recommendations for this letter? Are we going to vote on the letter as a package? I'd just like to know how we're going to proceed here.
When we're done, we'll vote as a package, unless something's glaring. And
okay.
I'd like to do it as a package at the end to pull out if somebody wants.
All right. I mean, I'll withhold my comments then unless somebody makes individual motions to strike things.
Okay. Pat?
The next item was a recreational data collection. The bill specifies that there is a prohibition on fees for recreational fishermen for the purposes of data collection. We had a rather lengthy discussion at the committee meeting. The committee did not express consensus about whether they supported that prohibition or not. There was another suggestion that if you wanted recreational data, permitting vessels for charter party boats was a possible solution to get at that information. No consensus reached. I don't know whether you want to discuss it around the table or not, but that sort of summarizes in very brief way what the discussion was at the committee meeting.
Anybody? Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to make a comment on this that the several of the major recreational organizations, the American Sport Fishing Association, which is the industry association, has been very supportive of the whole concept of the data collection and were not concerned about at all about the prohibition of fees. So, you know, essentially they supported the fees because their feeling has been that if it goes through with some sort of fee structure, it is more than likely that the states that do not have licenses will institute licenses on their own, and that in itself has some additional benefits for those states as well.
Paul?
I think we all remember the recent GAO study on MRF's data, recreation data, basically saying it's fatally flawed. And we had a briefing by Steve Murawski, and basically NIMS is responding to the GAO report that recreational data needs to be improved drastically. And there's going to be a series of workshops and a plan to you know, acquire better data and to utilize better recreational data and management. So rather than debate, you know, permits and fees and things like that, I think this is a national problem that I think that I imagine if the Magnuson Act is reauthorized, it's going to be silent on this until NIMS develops its plan on how to substitute for MRFs or how to improve MRFs. And it looks like they're going to some type of national registry and all kinds of stuff. But it's being orchestrated from the top down right now. And I bet just to say something, you know, we'll work closely with NIMS as a result of the GAO report on MRFs might satisfy that section.
At the committee, we did spend a lot of time talking about MRFs as opposed on how to fix it as opposed to where we're going. And I think if you read the act, the line below this says, the secretary shall report to Congress within 18 months after the date of the act the progress made in developing such a program, whether the program has resulted in significantly better data or management. So I think that we all agreed on. So that basically it was support whatever the program is going to be because we don't know what it is yet and we all know there's problems. We just didn't agree on the fee structure, and I think part of the disagreement on the fee structure, to be straightforward, was we had two state directors and two non-state directors, and the state directors would like the fees for their states, and I don't want to speak for them, but we didn't want to see it that way, so that's where it came from the committee.
Just one follow-up on my comment, and one of the other things is that if you end up with a system, you know, if it goes through with no fees so that the states that don't have licenses, saltwater licenses right now, don't continue not to have anything, and then you'll have part of the program administered at a federal level and part of the program, since those states that have existing licenses would use that data collection to support the requirement. You're going to have two different levels of information being collected.
John?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think the only issue that I had with it was that in the bill was a actual prohibition on fees. And I think that I felt that they shouldn't be eliminating all aspects or an aspect until they have done the review and decided how they wanted to do the overall data collection. And so I think that, you know, our comment could be along the lines of we'd like to keep all our options open for the time being, not that we support prohibitions or not that we support fees. So when we get to the vote, I guess we could go that way. Eric?
Yeah, I agree with John, and in my continuing effort late in my career to be equally unpopular with everyone, I wanted to clarify the remark of the chairman at the meeting. What I said was commercial and recreational fishermen all ought to pay a fee to states for fishing in state waters and to the federal government for fishing in federal waters. So equal pain. Somehow we collectively have to start to find a way to properly fund fishery management, research, data collection. It may not only be fisherman-based fees, it may be other ways, but in that sense, I agreed with John that you don't want to forego opportunities by specific congressional language, but the point is equally valid that it shouldn't just be recreational fishermen that do this, and it's going to be a larger issue and different from Magnuson reauthorization, how we ever solve that thorny problem. But, you know, equality across the board was the point I made. Thank you.
Okay, seeing how the committee did not come to consensus on this issue, if anybody would like to change it at this time or wait till we're done, I'll... John? It's on, yeah,
yeah, just
13.
Trying to get the right line. Maybe I don't need it, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we recommend that we, let's see, I would move that we, in our letter, recommend not having a prohibition on fees for recreational fishermen at this time. And the rationale is that we would want to have the review of the overall data collection process take place and then review the suggestions and recommendations out of that process.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would hope that we would modify the language that we're going to send to the Congress to reflect what Eric said. It seems to me to just say, well, we want to leave open the door to have fees for the recreational fishing community when the burden of data collection for the entire fishing industry, other than the recreational fishery right now, the fees are prohibited. And if we're going to start down the road of collecting fees for data collection, I see no reason why it ought to be limited to the recreational fishing community. As I pointed out in the committee meeting, if the Congress or the fisheries management process really wants to get a handle on what's happening in the recreational fishery, all they need to do is to issue a permit to every vessel that fishes in the EEZ that is going to land recreationally caught fish. If you do that, you'll have the same database that you have in the commercial fishing industry. You'll have a contact person, i.e. the owner or captain, who is familiar with what was caught on his vessel in any given time period, and an interviewer, just as the MRS does, could contact those individuals versus it being a random sampling. They would have a specific list of people that they could pull to find out what was caught on any given period on their vessel. I don't agree with a general federal fisheries permit. I don't think it's necessary in order to collect the data that they are talking about. But if, in fact, we believe that it is necessary to collect fees in order to be able to determine who caught what, why, it ought to be that we're saying that it is consistent to collect that fee across the spectrum of the fishery so that the burden of data collection and assessment work is borne by everybody equally.
John?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think Tom and Eric's rationalization of why we would oppose the language of prohibition of any new fees is correct, and I think that I have no problem with the that language reflecting why we would suggest not having that language in there at this particular time. So I have no problem with that being captured as the rationalization.
Okay. Rip?
I just wanted to make one correction on what Tom was just saying, and that was that this is concerns fish caught in the EEZ. If you read the language that was originally put in the bill, it's not just fish that are caught in the EEZ. It's any highly migratory fish, no matter where it's caught, and any anadromous fish, no matter where it's caught. So that covers quite a wide spectrum, and a lot of that will be caught in state waters.
Like I said, I really don't want to get in a debate of how to fix it, but I know one of my suggestions has been we already have the HMS permit, and it should cover everybody on the East Coast from Maine to Florida. So I don't think we need to change the act at all because I think we already have it in the act, and everybody should have the permit, and it is a $35 fee. But I kind of like John's first suggestion. Rather than saying support or don't support the prohibition, just saying we don't want to limit any of our options. I think if you put it, we don't want to limit our options with the language that Tom Hill has, then we're I think NIMS were silent on the issue of fees. And rather than saying we support or don't support, just say we shouldn't limit any options at this time. Dave Gayful?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that, but I think in this case the motion is to the specific language that's here. If there's another section on prohibition of fees, then we can make a motion to that as well. But the motion is actually to lines 1, 2, and 3 on page 13, where there's a specific section, paragraph 2, prohibition of fees. So I think, you know, we can provide the rationale along with the motion, but I think the motion actually has to be to the specific language that's here. And, you know, I think we could make another motion if there's another section somewhere else on prohibition of fees.
Okay. I'd like to limit the discussion. I hope we're ready for the question. Audience? No. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13. Opposed? Abstentions. Two abstentions. Right. That's with the language that John agreed to for the rationale. Okay. Patty, you got it? Very good. Move on. Council training.
Council training program is included in this bill. It requires future council members, once this bill, if it does pass and goes through the process, if passed, future council members must or will be required to take a training program. Consistent with our previous position and also the position of several of the other councils, by the way, we said we would oppose training as a condition of membership or voting. We also the committee suggested that training be expanded to include those that are groups in the Act, and that council members and it just refers to council members, but expand the list so that it's new and existing council members, committee members, advisory panel members, as well as council and state agency staff, as resources allow. But we are opposed to, the point was that we are opposed to a training program being a condition of membership and voting.
Paul?
I would also recommend that since this is a result of the Oceans Policy Act and Pew Commission about training, and NIMS has let a contract with, I forget her name, but anyway, the whole program is being developed and looked at. I'd like them to fund it. We don't get any more money. I consider our training program that we've instituted in New England very important for members to meet members of the Science Center, talk about assessments, meet the regional office, and talk about their roles in fisheries management, and come to our staff and spend 3 days in a regional training program. And I don't want to do away with that. And if we're going to have an additional program, I can't afford to fund that, travel or compensation. So if you would, I would urge the council to add, and this program should be funded by the National Marine Fisheries Service.
Any objection to that language being added? Okay. Sally?
I was just wondering, I've read this section a few times, and I didn't see where it said that this was would be required a required condition of membership or voting. Did I miss that? It is on page, it starts on page 20, not on page 14, as the reference is in the summary. And after that, I do have a follow-up.
I don't think it's in there. I think it was just the council wanted to make sure that didn't get added. It was just Pat.
It's labeled required training, and it says that once the bill is passed, council members appointed after the date of the enactment of the bill must complete the training program developed under this subsection. Does not include the language as a condition of voting, but simply says must complete. And I think the committee members inferred that it would be they would be required before they could actually fulfill their functions as council members.
Eric?
Yeah. Either the earlier Pombo draft or the Senate draft made it was a condition of voting. In other words, once after a certain amount of time had elapsed, if you had not had the training yet, you could not vote, which was offensive to many people. So it's a holdover comment. Maybe it's not necessary here since we're commenting on the most recent bill.
Sally?
I'd suggest that we get rid of it, mainly because I feel like it does show another level of resistance to incorporating better science into management. I know I sound like a broken record, but that's what a lot of this, that's how I interpret a lot of this. And I think if we don't need to reference it, I don't think that we should, because requiring all members to be trained before they come to this table can only bolster the ability of this body to do its job. And if we said, okay, we're willing to go through this training before we're going to sit at this table and vote, then I think we're saying that we want to do a better job. So I would suggest getting rid of that language in any letter that goes
forward.
It's like part of the rationale, I think, from the committee was also that requiring before voting was your first meeting that you're a council member, you're sworn in, and for, like in New England, the very first thing we do is the election of officers and things like that, and we didn't want that to have to be a condition of council training on. Maybe some people would like that, but Dave?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the citing here is wrong. Page 14, line 7 doesn't seem to have any, that whole page doesn't have anything to do with council training.
Which is, and that was one of them. There's another one that, now that you remind me, too, I have to call to your attention. It's on page 21, lines 14 through 17 is the correct place if you want to look at the exact language in the bill.
Yeah, one of the other concerns that we had in dealing with the training program, while I think we all support a training program, and that's what we that's what our language suggested, that it be available to the advisory panel members as well as council staff and state agency staff folks, but the. Have the having it as a requirement strictly for new members, in a certain way, infringed on the state-federal relationship, and that is the governors are supposed to be appointing people that they feel are the appropriate people to be put on the council, and if they're selected by the Commerce of Secretary of Commerce, based on the government's recommendation, then they should be eligible to participate in the program. If we have something else that is in there for training that they can take advantage of, I think that's a plus. But making that mandatory then basically is usurping the ability of the governor to select the right people and the Secretary of Commerce to agree with him that or her that they have selected people that are qualified. So that's a little bit of a fine line there, and it was that was another area that we were concerned about with this language.
Thank you, John, for reminding me. Eric, was that?
Yeah, very briefly. Thank you. Unfortunately, Sally's logic has influenced me to want to keep that language in, and it's for the reason John pointed out. You're nominated based on knowledge and experience. You're selected by Secretary of Commerce, then training is a good idea. It should not be a condition of voting, and I think it's helpful to just leave that point in there. Thanks.
Jim, did you have a hand?
Yeah, my point is not making it mandatory in that, especially from industry people, most of these people, myself and these other guys, actually have jobs that don't have anything to do with the council, and, you know, you keep putting more time demands on these particular people, you're going to have a chance of not getting people to come forward and want to do this particular job, because it is very time consuming, and most of the people that you're getting picked have been vetted already and they're familiar with the process. So I would just avoid making it mandatory. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, next.
Under Council Operations and Authorities, this particular comment related to a paragraph that says the a governor may submit the names of individuals from academia and other public interest areas, including conservation organizations, the seafood-consuming public, if the governor has determined that each individual is qualified, and so forth. I didn't skip a line there. The committee felt that this was a redundant provision, that the governors can already appoint whomever they pleased, provided that they're qualified under the current provisions of the Act. So the recommendation was to delete this section, that it was not necessary.
Okay. Framework authority?
In keeping with the council chair's positions, framework authority is now included in the Act. It never was before. It only referred to amendments to fishery management plans and not framework adjustments. So that's, I think the chairs thought that was a good thing, and the committee also agrees.
Okay, keep going.
Entire section on regional ecosystems research, the committee supported this wholeheartedly. It's a very long section, lots of details in it, but as opposed to some previous bills, doesn't compel the councils to do certain things, but allows them to or promotes expansion of ecosystems research, but without specific requirements. Each council can move ahead at its own pace.
Anybody? Keep going.
Next provision. This was an editorial comment. The bill refers to when talking about participants who might qualify for a limited access privilege program, this bill refers to residents who might qualify must reside in the management area of the relevant council. The committee's suggestion was to change that word to the management unit described in a fishery management plans because, for example, in the case of the scallop fishery, we have scallopers who reside in fish under the rules of our fishery management scallop, FMP, who reside in the Mid-Atlantic Council's area of jurisdiction. There are defined geographic areas, and it was suggested editorial change so that people would not be precluded from participating in a limited access privilege program just because they lived in another area but had especially historically participated in the fishery, such as those folks from Virginia who have historically scalloped.
Does everybody understand that issue?
It makes sense.
Okay. Keep moving.
Another editorial comment, but maybe important, at least it was to the committee members. There's a provision that includes for, how do I describe this, to extend limited access privileges to those who have not historically participated in the fishery. The committee was concerned that this could lead to increased participation in some fisheries rather than diminishment of participation, which has been a goal of a number of council actions, if not directly, certainly indirectly, and that because we've had problems to this effect, they did not want to be compelled to include these folks in whatever fashion that they felt like limited access privilege programs should be developed according to whatever rules we have that govern the FMP and that the council passes rather than to include in this. What I think they were getting at was crew members and people like that who have not historically participated.
Somebody? Marine protected areas. Oh. Eric? Sorry.
Racing ahead now, I guess I have a concern with page 35 at lines 14 through 16. And if you will, I'll offer a motion in a moment to strike some language. But the words that say, including those that have not historically had the resources to participate in the fishery, in the context of a community as opposed to a fisherman, well, I have concerns with the language 14 through 16, starting including those that have not historically and ending with to participate in the fishery. You know, we've got scarce resources. Most of them are already overcapitalized or fully utilized, and it seems to me counterproductive to have the Act say we're going to cast a wider net to try and capture communities that may not have ever been involved in the fishery, but we want to see if we can get them involved because that simply means that the opportunities for people who have been involved are going to be diminished. I would be more comfortable with striking the words including those through participate in the fishery on those lines. And if you'd like it, I'll offer that as a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Rather than doing that, I want to look at the committee because I kind of thought we did at the committee. John, do you recall?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll go with your recollection, but because I can't remember something about in particular about it right now.
I know we had quite a discussion on that. Yeah. So, well, we just got these yesterday, and I think that's a catch that was struck. So we'll leave that.
So the effect is that the language in the report and the comment letter will say we recommend striking that.
Right.
Those lines.
If there's okay. any, rather than taking the motion now, if somebody has an objection, we'll do it at the end as an overall package. Right. Thank you. Good catch. Go ahead, Pat.
The next issue is Marine Protected Area Authority. This, by the way, that should be line 24. Page 24, line 10. I transpose the numbers. 24, line 10, not 42. This bill gives the council's authority to establish marine protected areas. It's not included in any of the. It's not included currently in the Magnuson Act. The language. It was an editorial comment. Simply says discusses. That we can close an area to fisheries. Instead of all fisheries, we don't have to close it. When we want to establish a marine protected area, if the council chooses to go down that path, it doesn't have to close it to all fisheries. It can close it to selective fisheries. So this, by deleting the word all, it gives the council a little bit more flexibility if you're establishing a marine protected area for various reasons that are articulated here in the text.
Okay. Anybody? Okay, keep going.
Next issue refers to the New England, the Gulf Council also has this provision in the Act, New England referendum. The council objected to this provision at the, I think it was the January council meeting, and passed a motion, and I think maybe, Paul, you referred to something like this earlier, saying that if we decide to go to IFQ programs and those kinds of programs that fall under the definition of limited access privilege program, that the council preferred that whatever standard is applied to all the other councils should also apply to the New England Council. In other words, we opposed the two-thirds referendum for New England and said if there are other rules for other councils, that's fine, we'll abide by them, but please, Congress, be consistent. And that was approved by a council vote. So the same, we included the same comment in this bill, which requires the two-thirds referendum.
There should be no need to comment since it's already been a motion. Keep moving.
The next comment was an editorial. Was an editorial change. It was talking about revenues generated through a royalty program and deposited in a limited access system administration fund that would be subject to an annual appropriation by Congress. The committee felt, if I'm speaking correctly on this, the committee felt like it should, the fund should not be subject to an appropriation by Congress. If it's there, it's there, that Congress doesn't need to authorize it each year, and couldn't quite understand why it was subject to appropriations, except that when times get tough budgetarily, sometimes funky things happen in Congress. So that was to ensure that the fund would be there and not subject to the appropriation, suggested deleting that subject to appropriation phrase.
Eric?
I agree with that point, but also in the paragraph of the report that Pat is talking about, I think, and I'm asking other committee members, in the last line, to be clearer, we really meant should be made available to fund FMP-specific management initiatives. Isn't that the point we're trying to make, is that revenues that come from these types of funding mechanisms should be based,
yes.
should be used FMP
yes.
based.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. As it stated here in the language. Sorry, I didn't say it out loud.
Sorry. Next.
Limited access privilege program. In keeping with the previous council statement, we were very concerned that sectors and other possible programs that we may have in FMPs would be subject to limited access privilege programs, and we specifically commented that we did not want them to be subject to LAPP provisions that are now going to be in or that are in several of these bills. So we suggested adding additional language that described that LAPP programs would be LAPP rules would apply to only direct allocations of fish and not those as described in a sector. I'm not quite sure. Maybe the committee wants to expand on that a little bit.
Anybody?
Okay. Observer program. The committee was supporting a range of funding mechanism used and not only appropriations to cost observer coverage, which is in keeping with the scholarly research set-aside TAC that we didn't discuss at all, and the council or committee might recommend to the council that we do include the TAC set-asides.
Keep moving.
NEPA, I think, was the other very big issue, but the committee didn't spend a lot of time on it, but we did endorse the language of the House, which I think is consistent with the, so they haven't really spent a lot of time on the council chair's comments, but I think it's consistent with the outline that Paul gave you earlier with the council chair's positions, that you incorporate the provisions of NEPA in the Magnuson Act so that you still go through the public process, that you still look at impacts on social and biological impacts and cumulative impacts. All that would be incorporated in the Magnuson Act, and it's in this bill. And so the committee felt like they would that they do support that.
Keep going.
Committee also supported the section on duration of measures to rebuild diminished fisheries on page 63 and 64. Gives councils a little bit more flexibility with regard to rebuilding timeframes.
Sally?
Yeah, the existing statute, if you look at page 63 in the bill that these comments are directed toward, page 63 lines 1 through 12 are already in statute, where the rebuilding time frame cannot exceed 10 years except in cases where the biology of the stock dictates otherwise, other environmental conditions or management measures under an international agreement in which the U.S. participates dictate otherwise. So there's a great deal of flexibility already in the law, and there's flexibility that this council has already exercised, most notably through Amendment 13 and some of the rebuilding timeframes that are well beyond 10 years. So I see this as completely unnecessary. Flexibility already exists in the law, and it's reiterated here in that paragraph, page 63, lines 7 through 12. So I don't think we need to make this comment at all. The flexibility is there, and we use it.
Further comments? John?
Is there any committee members that can give me sort of a synopsis of whether or not this was an easy one for you to recommend or there was any debate?
John? Eric?
I recall it as a fairly easy one. I mean, I can sense Sally's discomfort on the kind of signal it sends, but the plain language of Roman numeral 2, Roman numeral 3, Roman numeral 4, I don't recall that it got anybody antsy. They're fairly straightforward. I don't recall that it was terribly debated.
If I can recall, I think by this point some of the committee members felt that we were picking the act apart pretty good, and they thought that we should support something and sent the letter saying that we supported something that was in there rather than picking apart what was there. It wasn't so much. That's my recollection of where it came from, but I could be wrong. Valerie?
Well, if that was the purpose of that comment, then I would suggest that we might as well remove it. I mean, if it's just for the sake of, I don't know, making nice, we don't need to do that, I don't think.
Okay. We're almost a few more things here, and then we'll get into a motion.
Pat? new prohibited acts. This one is one that a couple of committee members discovered as they were reading the bill. There is a prohibition on selling recreational catch, and a couple of committee members felt that that would impede participants in the giant bluefin tuna fishery who are permitted to sell their catch, that this would interfere with that activity, and that those kinds of prohibitions should be on a fishery management plan by fishery management plan basis and not included as a general overall provision in the Act.
Kenny, I'll just mention that one because there are certain places where it's allowed. One is a lot of places in the tuna fishery, whether it's a lot of times on a charter boat, you would consider that a recreational catch, but it's permitted under a different category. So it was just wanted to make sure that when this went forward, an activity that is already not sanctioned but lawful wouldn't be taken away. And I think there's some other plans that allow it. And it was also felt that the sale of fish is regulated mostly through the states and other regulations where it didn't need to be in the Magnuson. That's where that came from. It wasn't saying that we should be selling recreationally caught fish.
Okay. Overcapitalization. This was another editorial change. This was voluntary fleet reduction, and the clause reads that the basis for the recommendations would be that voluntary the phrase would read the most cost-effective, that voluntary fleet reduction could occur through the most cost-effective means of achieving voluntary reduction, including but not limited to the potential for industry financing. In other words, we would not limit it, fleet reduction, voluntary fleet reduction to industry financing, that we could leave the door open for other methods. It was just a little editorial change to allow more flexibility to the industry if they were participating in some kind of program.
Keep moving.
Same thing for the last one. It was an editorial change. The committee suggested adding the language because of this was in the section on consideration of economic impacts, which this bill spent some time on, that rather than compelling councils to include in fishery management plans overly burdensome provisions that would require economic and social impacts when we don't have the information available. So what they recommended putting in, the committee recommended putting in, taking into consideration the best available information on economic impacts of harvest restrictions in order to avoid making up things, stretching the data beyond its capabilities to describe and so forth. So that was an editorial suggestion. This was the sanctuary, sorry. Paul already described that the council chairs supported retaining management for authority of fisheries resources in the council's hands instead of the National Marine Sanctuary Program or the sanctuaries themselves. This is consistent with that. It's left, that provision was in the original Pombo bill and now left out of this amended bill that we received just before we met. The council supported, or the committee supported, including that fishery resources should remain under the authority of the council, under the jurisdiction of the councils, not the sanctuaries, and to be very clear about it. And that is consistent with the previous comment as well as the council chair's thinking. Last one I just included because it was an overarching issue and one in which we put in the letter on Senate Bill 2012 to Senator Stevens. The council felt very strongly at the time that we should lead with this issue about concerns about council funding. And we didn't discuss it at the committee meeting, but since I was reviewing the previous comments to make sure that you all knew what we had written before, I found this as the lead-in, and I didn't know whether you wanted to include it or not, but I put it in here for your consideration.
Okay. Going through the report, we don't have a committee motion. I won't make it because I was the chairman of the committee, and I'm also chairman here, so I'm not going to make a motion here, so I'll let somebody else. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move that the council adopt the recommendations of the Magnuson-Stevens Committee as amended.
Seconded? No. Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Okay, discussion on the motion. Tom Hill.
Yeah, just quickly, Mr. Chairman, I don't, Gene may correct me, but I'm not sure the last issue regarding increased funding is legal for us to do. My understanding is the council, as much as I agree with the sentiment, I'm not sure the council is not prohibited from lobbying Congress for money. I want to ask our legal beagle whether that is appropriate.
Well, if you've been asked to comment on this bill, then, and it's within the scope of that request, I think you can have that provision in there.
Can we put a dollar amount in?
No.
Okay, further comments? Eric?
Yeah. I didn't want to belabor this point because we were spending a lot of time on it before, but if you would go back to page 21, lines 14 through 18, this is under the council training. It's required, must complete the training course. I would move to amend that we recommend striking paragraph 3, which is required training. Effectively, that means the training is still called out. It's still made available as an opportunity for council members, committee members, panel members, and staff, council and state staff. So it just eliminates the sole provision that it would be mandatory.
Okay, is there a second to John?
Mr. Chairman, I'll accept that as a friendly amendment. I think that was the intent of our discussion.
Okay.
So I'll accept that if the seconder is
seconder agree. Yep. Paul?
Well, I think you have to look at it that if it's not required, then I'm not so sure NIMS would put it on. I mean, right now, you know, it was a great thing to have, and it was, you know, once a year, and then it went to once every other year, then it kind of fell by the wayside. And both the Pew and the Oceans Policy Act felt that this job is so important that there ought to be some detailed training. GAO report, I think they funded the development of the training program for so much. And I think the required part of it is directed towards NIMS to put together a quality program. And if it isn't required, you know, that might give NIMS the flexibility not to put together a program.
Eric?
Paul's got a good point, and you have to look at page 20 and 21 in context. Top of page 20 says, within 6 months, the secretary shall develop a training course for newly appointed council members, period. And then it goes into what would be required. Then it says in paragraph 2, the training course shall be available to both new and existing council members, staff, et cetera, and may be available to committee or advisory panel members. All of that would remain. It's only paragraph 3 that says, council members appointed after the date of enactment of these amendments must complete the training course. That's the sole provision I'm recommending that we take out. Now, if that still creates the problem in Paul's mind, then, you know, I could look at it differently.
Anybody else? Okay, that's been accepted as a friendly. Okay. Further discussion? Sally?
Yeah, I'd suggest that the references to pages 63 and 64, the section is called Duration of Measures to Rebuild Diminished Fisheries. Since those comments in the meeting summary and my understanding of it aren't substantive as far as any editorial changes, major or minor, that be stricken from any letter that goes from the council to members of Congress.
Okay, is that accepted as a friendly? No. Is there a second to the motion? there a second? Seconded by John. Motion to amend. Discussion? Paul?
I think, Sally, Section 3, you can exceed the 10 years if the Secretary determines that such 10-year period should be extended for one or more diminished components of a multi-species fisheries. I think that was in the guidelines before. It wasn't quite in the Act, but I'm not sure. So that might be a change. And I think certainly number 4, the Secretary makes substantial changes to the rebuilding targets. That is a very gray area. When they move the goalposts, you're in the middle of a 10-year rebuilding. You think you're there, and then all of a sudden, with an improved science, the goalpost gets moved. It's a gray area, and I think now it's saying you can have additional rebuilding. So I think that's different.
Tyler?
I wasn't saying that it wasn't different. I was, in my original comments, I was saying that the existing law includes lines 1 through 12 on page 63, and the additions are from line 13 on through the remainder of that section, including what you referred to. My reference was to my understanding of what the reason for commenting on this was, because the committee just wanted to say something positive. But more to the point, if you look at page 63, lines 7 through 12, there's a huge amount of flexibility already in the law. And this body is already exercising it, especially in terms of as the biology of the stock of fish might dictate otherwise in terms of a 10-year rebuilding plan. So what I'm saying is that there's flexibility already in the law, that we should stick with what we have rather than trying to look for more exceptions, more outs, more ways to extend rebuilding timeframes that we already have, that in many cases, especially when the biology of the stock dictates otherwise, are extended beyond the 10-year 10-year goal.
Okay. Further discussion? John Nelson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, while staff captured, I think, the overall sense of why we were recommending supporting that section, the language, I don't think it was just because we're nice, which goes without saying. But I think it was also a reflection, and Pat's memory is probably better than mine, but I thought that at this particular point, some changes had been made that we had recommended in the Senate bill, and I thought they were captured in this section, and that's why we, in general, provided the support for this section. I think that was one of the rationale that we had gone over at this particular point.
Go ahead, Pat.
John is correct. I did not say that the committee supported it because it was a good thing and so forth, and that's not in the committee summary. That was somebody else's remark. The committee did look at it. The committee supported the changes. We didn't spend a lot of time on it for exactly the reasons that John said. There are a couple of changes that allowed a little bit more flexibility and that will address some historic problems that this council has encountered in looking at the rebuilding timeframes, and that was the rationale. But we did not spend a lot of time on it because I think the committee members looked at it and said, good, you know, these are reasonable changes. So hence the general comment that the committee supported this section. It was not, there were framework adjustments that we supported, and we said, good, we'll talk about that. That's a nice positive thing, but not this one. The conversation was a little bit more substantive than that, so John's correct.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Abstentions? 2 abstentions. Motion? Yeah. Failed. Okay. Any other motions? We're back on the motion. Main motion. You ready for the question? Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. 3 opposed. Abstentions? 1 abstention. And I think that's it for Magnuson. Okay, Pat, you'll redo. Okay. Pat, redo the letter and then incorporate the changes. Glenn?
Yeah, I just had a point of information that I wanted to share.
Okay.
Thank you. The bill that you just provided comment on is the version that was reported by the House Resources Committee, and it will now go to the House floor at some point, perhaps in sometime in July, most likely, at which time it is likely a manager's amendment will be brought to the floor, which will, you know, could incorporate some of the changes that you recommended. So it is appropriate to make comment. But I wanted to bring one event that took place during the markup to your attention, and there really is only one member of the Resources Committee from the New England region, and that's Congressman Markey from Massachusetts. And he was perhaps the most strident voice supporting the amendment that struck the the provision that would have given this council primary authority over fishery management provisions in the marine sanctuary section of the bill. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I don't know how you plan to communicate your position on this. I'm very glad that you took the position. But you might want to make a special effort to educate the one member of that committee from our region as to why this council feels strongly that the council ought to have preeminent authority over managing fisheries and marine sanctuaries as opposed to the marine sanctuary program. And clearly there was a clear lack of understanding, it appeared to me, as to what the implications were, and he was, you know, one of the voices on the committee that carried that vote.
If there's no objection, I think Paul can.
Is that lobbying?
Is that lobbying?
Can we send him a personal letter?
What are you planning on doing?
Sending a personal letter to the congressman saying that the council viewpoints on why the council should maintain their jurisdiction.
Well, is that going to be clear in the general letter that you're sending to Congress, and he can be copied
CC'd
on
him?
It as
copied on, yeah.
Right. We'll just copy it to make sure he gets it.
I'll be ready to give him a copy of that.
Okay.
My chair's going to be there.
Anything else? Okay. Move next agenda item. Still on schedule. Chad, do you need any time, or are you ready to roll? Ready to roll. Okay, the industry fund buyback. It'll be Chad and I guess Vito.